We are about to have a politically incorrect, but hopefully very Christian, discussion about immigration.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire, coming your way from right outside of Ontario, California, here for a special culture conference. And I've been really looking forward to today's show. Wanted to get these two guests on with me, John Zmierak and Al Parada. They have written together The Politically Incorrect Guide to Immigration. And honestly, I could not think of any two more politically incorrect guys than John and Al. I have the joy of working with them regularly on the stream. If you don't go to the stream, stream.org on a daily basis, you're missing out. This is the place to go for Christian commentary on the news and what's happening in the world around us. And John Zmierak is a senior editor of the stream. And another politically incorrect book, he's written The Politically Incorrect Guide to Catholicism. I don't know a Catholic in the world more critical of the Pope right now than John Zmierak. He received his BA from Yale University in 86, his MFA in screenwriting and fiction, and his PhD in English in 1996 from Louisiana State University. His focus was the English Renaissance. He's always bringing fascinating background as he writes. And then Al Parada, managing editor of the stream, formerly the VP creative director for All Comedy Radio. Yeah, friends, this is, I don't know which way today's interview is going to go, but it's going to go for sure. He was Voice of America producer and passion arts minister at Living Faith Christian Church and co-author of the counterterrorism memoir Hostile Intent and several plays as well. Married with two puppies. Yeah, I think John's got some puppies as well. So without further ado, John and Al, welcome, welcome to the broadcast. Great to have you guys with us today.
Thanks, Michael. Good to be on.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
So John, you've written now another politically incorrect guide. Tell me about your politically incorrect writing. You don't seem to be afraid to break some of the rules and some of the taboos that are out there.
Well, people used to ask me if I had Tourette syndrome because I just don't have a filter. You know, I just kind of say exactly what is on my mind, and it's a problem sometimes. It's like I don't have to worry about lying because I don't even know how to be tactful.
Got it. So, and Al, the same way, I don't look at you as a politically correct kind of guy.
Well, what can I say about that? I after spending years just trying to find the punchline and everything, nobody ever cared what I thought. They just cared, oh, what can you say about it? Funny. It's a little bit weird to be on the side where I have to actually sound like I know what I'm talking about.
Got it. All right, so friends, right now we're having a problem on our live stream, so because of that, I'm just dropping out, and we will be going on just with our audio feed here. But let's talk about this politically incorrect guide to immigration. John, why is this such a hot topic in America today? I mean, I know we know this, but what are some of the real touch points that make this so intensely controversial?
Well, the left in America has seen that ordinary blue-collar Americans of every race are losing patience with its big government, clunky, bureaucratic, Venezuelan-style solutions to every social problem. And also, it's anti-religious sexual radicalism. Seeing that, they've decided that they're unhappy with the American people, so they want to dissolve it and import a new one from poor countries, especially Latin America, people who don't know our political system, who aren't attached to our constitutional principles, who are maybe acclimatized to big government and socialism and not surprised by corruption, because the countries they're coming from, unfortunately, are pervaded by corruption and socialism. So the Democrats think that they will simply import their new governing majority. They're trying to equate opposition to a mass influx of low-skilled workers into a country which has lost most of its manufacturing base and doesn't have jobs for low-skilled workers. They're trying to equate opposition to that with racism. They're trying to take the most disgraceful parts of American history, namely slavery and segregation, and they're trying to say that if you believe in America should have borders, if you believe that citizens are different from non-citizens, that's like distinguishing between people based on their race. It's a lie. It's absurd. They know it's a lie, but they figure they can get away with it, and we're not going to let them.
All right. So, Al, I'm in California right now. The conference that I'm speaking at, it's a church planting conference, several hundred churches in America, more than that overseas. But it turns out that the great majority of the folks here in California are Hispanic Christians, including the gentleman driving us back and forth. And he said that most of those that are now in America that have been here for many, many years, most that he knows came in illegally. And now they're part of our country and they're established here. So shouldn't we say, hey, well, let's give other folks a chance? So many folks that are part of our country today may have come in illegally, but now they're citizens in our midst. Shouldn't we do the same for others? What about Christian compassion? How do you respond to that?
Well, the first thing that jumps out at me when I hear the talk about Christian compassion in this issue is I think of that Huffington Post statistic that 80% of the young girls and women who come up from Central America on that journey, the illegal immigration path, get sexually molested along the way. And if we have a system that facilitates that, I as a Christian, I'm nauseated. I can't abide by it. And so that's where I start this, when you start hearing about, you know, Christian morality and all this in dealing with this issue. You know, it's a much bigger picture. It's a much broader thing. It's not as easy as it is to say, oh, that's unchristian to do that. No, letting people suffer, the human trafficking, the people who get recruited into gangs. How Christian is it to have a system that facilitates that? So that's sort of where, when I hear that, that's the first thing that jumps out at me. It's a little bit of a whistle for me.
Got it. All right. So in your mind, there are larger issues. Where, as men coming from different Christian perspectives, but still saying that Christian faith is very important to you. John, where would you say that the president is getting this right, and where would you say that you have real concerns about the president's position?
I think the president, his heart is in the right place, and he wants the right things, but I don't think he's made securing the southern border enough of a priority. We need to build a wall. He needs to put military bases at the main crossing points, because right now, large parts of Mexico are actually under the control of drug cartels. You know what else is under the control of drug cartels? The U.S. southern border. It is the sovereign territory of groups like MS-13. We have no control over it. The cartels are smuggling people in at $5,000 a head. They were grabbing children and giving them to immigrants as get-out-of-jail-free cards until President Trump tried to shut that down with the policy that caused so much controversy of separating adults and children, in part to find out if they're really their children, because in mm-hmm. many cases they weren't. 10,000 kids that the Obama administration just practiced catch and release, 10,000 of them ended up as slave laborers in egg plants in Iowa, or disappearing into the child sex trafficking networks of the underground economy. We have to gain control over our sovereign border in order to enforce any laws whatsoever, including protecting women and girls from being raped. As Al said, 80% of those women are raped. And if the U.S. is letting that happen, it's on our conscience. First, we have to establish order and control. We have to take control back from the drug cartels. Then we have to impose order on the workplace in America and make it necessary for every employer to check whether workers applying are legal to be in the country. I bet you thought that every company had to do that. They don't. There's a system called E-Verify. The federal government set it up, but it's voluntary. You can check if they're legal, but you don't really have to. That's completely insane. Donald Trump needs to close the border, build a wall, build military bases, do what's necessary despite Congress to secure the border. He needs to insist that E-Verify must be mandatory for every business in America. And then, you know, there are a number of other steps. We have a 15-point plan, which Al helpfully labeled Mission America, that would secure our border and also reduce the number of low-skill immigrants coming in chasing jobs that don't exist, running down the wages of native-born Americans. You know, blue-collar Americans have not gotten a pay raise in 45 years, if adjusted for inflation. That completely coincides with the policy of chain migration, of letting people come into the country legally because they're somebody's brother or somebody's cousin, rather than because they match what job skills and education the American economy needs.
All right. In a moment, I want to go over to Al, and we'll start to lay out part of this 15-point plan. But, John, one more question from you. You have read a lot historically. As I mentioned, many of your articles will bring in references from world literature, from history. If you are trying to point to a lesson from history for America today, because there's nothing new under the sun in that regard, what would you point to try to wake up Americans to your point of view on immigration?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I would point to Lebanon in the 1970s. That's a country which used to be majority Christian, where Christians used to be safe to practice their faith, which used to have a kind of fragile balance of power between the Muslims and the Christians. Then in the 1980s, Palestinian refugees started flooding into the country in Lebanon. It provoked a civil war because it destroyed the balance of power. Suddenly Christians are in the minority. Now Christians in Lebanon no longer feel safe. They're no longer the dominant group. They're simply being outvoted. And they're afraid that in a civil war they would be defeated. I see that happening in America with the left. One state after another is flipping from blue to red, from red to blue. California used to be the political home of Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon. Now it's a one-party failed state run by the Democrats. It might as well just join Mexico. And again, this is not an ethnic question. It's a political question. 71% of recent Hispanic immigrants to America who are here legally, 71% of them support bigger government and more government programs. So what that means is one state after another is going to become permanently left-wing Democrat, pro-abortion, anti-religious liberty. These Hispanic immigrants, they may be Catholic, they may be evangelical, but overwhelmingly they vote their perceived economic interest as poor people rather than the dictates of their religion, which would lead them to be more conservative.
All right, friends, we're going to pick up on the discussion with John Zemirak and Al Parada, A Politically Incorrect Guide to Immigration. That is the name of the book, 866-34-TRUTH. If you have a question, if you have a question you'd like to ask our guests, if you're a Christian, have a different perspective, by all means, give us a call. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on Line of Fire. For those used to watching the broadcast as well, you'll just get audio today, so everyone listening on radio, the same as ever, 866-34-TRUTH. We may take some calls as well. As you know, I don't speak much about immigration on the show because I don't feel it's an area where I have expertise, and it's not something God called me to focus on. So I have no interest in just offering my opinion as an opinion unless I have something behind it. That's why I've been eager to have my friends John Zemirak and Al Parada joining me on the air today. They have co-authored a book with Regnery Publishing, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Immigration. So Al, 15-point plan. We'll see how many of the points we get through, obviously laid out in more detail in the book. Let's start with point number one. Give us what it is and the why behind it.
Well, first off, what we've been talking about already is build the wall. We need the security. Now, if the word build the wall is too much trouble for people, we'll build gates with really big structures holding them up in between the gates. But we need to do it. We'd rather pay a few more cents at a restaurant than watch San Diego go up with a dirty bomb. You know, we got to do it. Our security depends on it, period. Also, we have to track people who enter the U.S. on visas and immediately remove those who overstay them. 2 years, 2015, 750,000 people overstayed their visas. That's seven Rose Bowls. filled with people who did not leave when they were supposed to. We know the danger of that. We saw it on 9/11. Stripping sanctuary cities of discretionary federal funding and use other means to exert pressure on them. Can't have that. Can't have people, can't like what they're doing in Oakland, where they're giving warnings to, you know, criminals. Hey, here comes ICE. Can't do that. You can't do that. It's dangerous. It is flat out dangerous, and it's dumb. Removing criminal aliens. Yes, we already talked about E-Verify number 5. John also had this idea of an IRS hotline, not a cheap thing where you call call on your neighbor, but you have to have a basic idea of you have to have much more factual evidence behind it that there is an illegal immigration going on. It can't just call up just because you see somebody mowing a grass that doesn't look like they belong there.
All right, let me ask you a question though. You talk about dirty bombs and things like that. What if someone says, it just sounds like you're fear-mongering. Come on, how many folks are here? They're trying to blow us up. They're really here to just trying to find a better life. They're fleeing from drug cartels and murderous situations in some of these unstable Latin American countries. They're not here to kill. You know, they're not radical Muslim terrorists trying to destroy us. Aren't you just guilty of fear-mongering?
No, and here's why. How many does it take? I co-wrote that counterterrorism handbook. It scared the daylights out of me. Okay, we were talking about in that book. We mentioned that a weapon of mass destruction was stopped a few miles from the border that was heading to a city in the southwest. So in that sense, is it fear mongering? No, it's real. We do know that Hezbollah, the terrorist group, is teaming up with the Latin American drug folks. Smuggling stuff into this country, smuggling people in this country. That's Hezbollah. That's the A-team in terrorism. So we know what's happening. So not recognizing that danger because out of political correctness is dangerous. It is a dangerous thing to do. So I kind of reject that one.
And John, if we talk about cost and, you know, building a wall, that's a lot of money. To build the wall and you know you're where are we going to get that money from? How do you respond,
Al? I think you've got those numbers right.
All right, hang on. I will let Al give the numbers. Go ahead, Al.
Well, a simple way to look at it is basically if you're talking $20 billion for wall and you're spending $40 billion on education, the thing pays for itself. With the money you spend on educating the children of illegal immigrants, you're doubling the cost that you're spending on the wall anyway. So it pays for itself in that way. If you stopping the number of illegals coming in, all the other kind of services that go towards illegals, it pays for itself. So the idea that it costs a lot, now it pays for itself.
All right. So someone listening would say, okay, you guys make a good case based on American nationalism. You guys make a good case based on patriotism. You guys make a good case based on what's best for American workers or safety to keep terrorists out, potential terrorists out. But where's your Christian heart that cares for those who are fleeing from difficult situations, life-threatening situations, and who look to America as a place of refuge? And yeah, given time, they'll become good contributing citizens. But our first concern is to be a place of refuge. I mean, after all, don't we have Christian roots and talk about being a Christian majority nation? How do you respond to that?
I would like to
go
Michael,
for it.
Can I?
Yeah.
I would say that public policy should be directed in our country, which has separation of church and state. Public policy should be directed by justice, by the best interests of the country. I don't think, as a Christian, I should be imposing Christian charity via the government forcibly on citizens who aren't Christians. That's for the churches to do. Okay, so the government should look out for the citizens of the country. Within that, we as Christian citizens, as churches, we can look for the immigrants who've come here legally and help them. We can teach them English. We can teach them job skills. We can offer them daycare. It's our job to be merciful within the framework of justice. The government's job is to enforce justice and to pursue the legitimate self-interest and protect the rights of the citizens. We don't live in an officially Christian country based on the New Testament. We live in a country based on natural rights, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. The government's job is to enforce the law and protect the best interests of the citizens. The church's job is to go above and beyond that and offer Christian charity to people through our voluntary donations, not through tax money that we take from people by force. Now, I'm a Catholic. I'm ashamed of the way the Catholic Church behaves on this. The Catholic Church does nothing out of its own pocket. The Catholic Church has set all these institutions like Catholic Charities, Catholic Relief Services. In fact, they are almost 100% federally funded. They're just government contractors, and they pose as Christian charities, and in fact, they're just taking tax money and distributing it to people, and as a result, the U.S. Catholic bishops are trying to increase their revenue through these charities by increasing immigration. And also they're trying to keep the pews full in their churches, because 40% of Catholics leave the church in America. And the only way the Catholic bishops can keep the churches from being emptied, like those in many mainline liberal Protestant denominations, is to keep bringing in people from Latin America who they hope will stay Catholic for a few years before they leave too.
All right, so John, in your viewpoint, this is similar to what Democrats are doing, because the vast majority of immigrants, or especially those that came in illegally, are going to vote Democrat versus Republican. So in your mind, the Catholic Church is doing the same thing. One's trying to get votes, the other's trying to get people in the pews.
Right, exactly. I call it cheap votes, and then pew fillers. They're trying to keep the pews full, and rather than fix the seminaries and get rid of the openly gay priests and teach Orthodox Christian doctrine, they're just giving up, shrugging, and saying, no, the native-born Catholics will leave, but there'll always be some more immigrants to take their place. It's like throwing troops into the front lines in World War I, watching them get mowed down and just bringing in more cannon fodder from the rear. You know, it doesn't matter. Just keep throwing them into the trenches.
Now, friends, one thing we guaranteed you is today's discussion was going to be politically incorrect. So you are hearing it from John Zemirak and Al Parada. You can read them regularly, along with my writings and others, on the stream, stream.org. And they'll be weighing in articulately and clearly on key issues happening day by day in the world around us. And John, I had written, one of the few things I wrote about immigration and refugees and things like that was during the focus being more on Muslim countries and Syria, that I said the government should focus on security and the church should focus on compassion. You're saying something similar to that. Al, as a local church, what can Christians do to be a compassionate voice and a compassionate arm in the midst of immigration controversy? What can the church do? Local church, what can they do?
Again, as John was saying, love on people. Our responsibility is to love on people, to support efforts that help facilitate the move into America. I like to say that, you know, there's a gate, and beyond the gate is the American dream, or you could say the city on the hill. But there's a path to the gate. Stay on the path. If we can help people, if we can fix the system to help people, we are setting up a system that will allow us in years to come to create the great citizens, and we need to support. We just need to be supporting that as believers. Yes, we do the compassion, but as part of the compassion is making sure we vote in ways and act in ways that help facilitate a system that helps make this system work for not only for today but for the generations to come. The people who are in the villages in Africa or the places in Latin America who want to come here.
Got it. Hey, friends, we are going to return and continue this discussion. And if you'd like to call in, if you have a question or a different perspective, by all means, we'll get to some calls, 866-34-TRUTH. I'm looking at some of the bullet points from this book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Immigration by John Zemirak and Al Parada. Check this out. After Ronald Reagan's 1986 amnesty, the illegal population went from 3.2 million to 11 million. How about this? 62% of naturalized immigrants are for the Democrats. Only 25% are for the Republicans. And according to the Politically Incorrect Guide to Immigration, Illegal immigration cost American taxpayers $116 billion dollars a year. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My guests, John Zmirak and Al Parada, representing Catholic and Protestant faith traditions, say we need to build the wall. They argue that building the wall would cost less than half of what we spend to educate illegal immigrants every year. They say that illegal immigration cost American taxpayers $116 billion a year, that competition from immigrants cost American workers $450 billion a year. This is Michael Brown. You are listening to The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884 is the number to call. I want to get to some questions from our callers momentarily, but first, just want to talk to John Zmirak for a moment. John, what was the philosophy of our founding fathers as far as immigration? Was it just open borders? Was it Christian only? What was their philosophy?
Their philosophy was actually quite cautious. The founding fathers really only wanted English-speaking Protestants because they saw they only thought that the American system of liberty was likely to work with people who were from a culture that was used to having liberty, and there weren't that many places outside of England that had such liberty. They gradually became a little bit more optimistic. They saw that some of the people fleeing from Germany, you know, coming away out of the feudal regimes in Germany, that they wanted liberty too, and that they could acclimatize themselves. They could learn English, and they could learn the American system of laws and common law and all those things. And they gradually broadened. We gradually overcame some of the really unfortunate and wrong prejudices that we had, which kept black people from having citizenship, which wrongly kept Asians out of the country just because of their race. There were some periods of time in the past when, you know, overt racism governed our immigration policies, and that was wrong. But there's such a thing as going too far in the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
To where you don't even demand that people want to assimilate or that they respect the political system. I mean, look at Britain, look at Belgium, where you have tens of thousands of Muslims marching with signs demanding to impose Sharia on the country. In America, the equivalent is people from Latin America who are used to socialism wanting to impose socialism on the country. And I would just point out that, look, my main concern politically is and has been since age 11, protecting unborn children from abortion. Do you know that the Republicans, which were the only party that has any respect for unborn life, the Republicans have only won the popular vote for president once since 1988, and that was in 2004 during the Iraq War. Every other year, even when we had Republican presidents, it was only because of the Electoral College. Hillary Clinton was a few thousand votes away from being president of the United States. If we keep bringing a million poor people into the country every year, a million low-skill workers, flooding them into the country, letting them eventually become citizens, how are they going to vote? Will we ever again have a pro-life president? Or a president who cares about religious liberty? Or is Donald Trump the last pro-life president, the last pro-Christian president we will ever have in America? The answer to that question lies 100% with immigration.
All right. Then you heard it from John Zmirak. We'll hear more from Al Parada in a moment. We'll go to the phone starting in Raleigh, North Carolina. David, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I do think that we need to change the policy to make it less expensive and less complicated for people to come here so that they don't feel forced to come here undocumented. And, you know, with every new wave of immigrants, like Irish need not apply. I mean, everybody has a story of feeling the way Latinas feel today. And you know, the whole thing of, you know, a lot of Latin Americans are Catholic, are pro-life, and they might just push the Democrats. You want our vote, you need to be pro-life as well. You can't assume that what might happen, really.
All right. Interesting perspective, David. I appreciate it. Al, how would you respond to that?
Well, the first point David made was great, and about the difficulty. And so when I talked about there's a path to a gate and beyond the gate is the American dream, our responsibility, I would say, is to make that path wider and straighter and clearer and add a few more gates in that sense. The idea. So we do have a responsibility to make it easier. Again, legal immigration. We get control of the system. A lot of better things can happen.
All right, John, anything you want to add in terms of perhaps
I would say
those coming in will surprise us, and many have a Catholic background and maybe more religious than American Catholics, so maybe they'll join the Democratic Party and change. Yeah, go ahead.
That's simply not true. If you look at the immigrants who came in after the amnesty, if you look at what happened in the state of California in the wake of Reagan's amnesty, you saw a state where pro-life candidates used to be able to compete on a statewide basis. Now it's completely hopeless. I'm sorry, but it's just not true that these people are going to push the Democratic Party in a pro-life direction. They do not exert that impact. It is naive, wishful thinking to say otherwise. It's our duty as Christians to be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. Being wise as a serpent, you look at the voting record of Hispanic immigrants after 1, 2, 3 generations. They keep voting pro-abortion because they see it as their economic self-interest. Just the way the Irish Catholics in Massachusetts vote their what they perceive as their economic interest, they vote for the Kennedys despite the Catholic faith. So, no, I'm sorry, that's naive. And I don't think we need to make it easier for low-skill immigrants to come into a country that has an enormous welfare state and doesn't have any jobs for them.
All right, David, thank you for the call. Well, John, what about the idea that these folks are doing work that a lot of Americans don't want to do, and they're willing to do it, they're willing to work hard and be here and do their best to make a living and do a lot of things that Americans don't want to do? Why should they be penalized for that?
Okay, Americans don't want to do them at the low wages that are being offered. So that right there, you just proved my point that immigration brings down the wages of the American working class. And employers who want to offer cheap, low wages can't find American workers willing to do it, replace them with illegal immigrants. How is that good? How is that positive? We want working class people to have living wages. We want them to be able to support their families. We want black people who grow up in America, Hispanics who grow up in America, poor whites who grow up in America, to be able to find dignified jobs that allow them to support a family. I'm amazed that people think that cheap labor that enriches big corporations is somehow Christian compassion.
Mm. All right, friends, if you want to weigh in, if you have a question or take issue with my guests, John Zmierich and Al Perotta, again, their new book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Immigration. Let's grab another call. Joel in Virginia, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Listen, my question is, the so-called deep state, what your two guests are saying is on point, but the one thing that is missing, who's behind it? And once you get down to who's behind it, you connect the dots. The secret orders have never been brought to the forefront. And we know that the Masonic Lodge, the Shriners, the Clinton and Bill and Hillary belong to the Skull and Bones. Those secret orders are not nationalist organizations. They're global organizations. And nobody wants to mention that because that is the deep state. It's just like the Fraternal Order of Police. They will never turn one of their own in.
And
why
Joel,
is the church leaving out the fact that the so-called immigration issue coming behind the back door, pushing the American worker out because they don't want to pay them? The greed margin is so wide amongst those Fortune 500. The Bilderbergs met in Switzerland 2 weeks ago. The Pope sent a representative with the Bilderbergs. What did the church do with the Bilderbergs? We know what they're about. But those organizations, the pastors not saying anything, and I have a hard time believing that Paula White and Pastor Jeffries are not in Donald Trump's ear as to who they're talking to, because we know who we're trying to. That's what America. Donald Trump says he's a nationalist. That went contrary to the New World Order. And those organizations, a part of the New World Order, but nobody wants to say it, right? The pastors don't want to preach about it on Sunday. So you want to go to the voting booth to vote, but you won't give us the information on why we, what we're voting for, knowing good and well that immigration is a back door to bringing America down. And they
all right, Joel. All right, so stay right there, Joel. I'm not one that's big on conspiracy theories, but I think John and Al, if anybody's open to different theories and ideas, you guys are. So, okay, deep state is one thing, but who's behind the deep state? John, Al, respond honestly okay. to Joel. He laid yeah. things out. Give an honest response.
John,
go ahead, Al.
Okay. What I would say is we do have to deal legitimately with the idea that there are people who do not believe in borders. They are the open border crowd. They are open about it. And there are people who are part of the who believe that like the southwest part of the U.S. is supposed to be back as part of Mexico. So we don't have to go, we don't even have to use the word conspiracy theory to talk about it. There are people who actually want the southern, southwestern part of the U.S. back with Mexico. Call Azatlan, how do you pronounce it? Azatlan, I think they want to call the land. They exist. La Raza was part of that effort. So, you know, the race, they want this stuff to happen. So we don't have to even talk about the word conspiracy theory. We know what's happening. We know there are people who are open border, that who think borders themselves are immoral, unbiblical. So, you know, that so we can simplify what Joel was saying and put it into those terms alone without having to worry about conspiracy theories at all.
All right, John?
I would say that globalism is an ideology, which is extremely dangerous. I don't know how conspiratorial we need to be about it. The European Union is openly trying to liquidate borders. Pope Francis is openly saying, he said in 2014 he went to Lampedusa, which is a tiny impoverished Italian town in Sicily that's overwhelmed with economic migrants from Africa, most of them Muslims. And he said that if you oppose these people coming into your country, you are like Cain murdering his brother or Herod slaughtering the children in Bethlehem. That kind of deranged globalist ideology has no precedent in Christian history. If you go to St. Augustine, he did not say the Roman Empire should welcome the Vandals and the Goths who were invading. He actually prayed for the victory of Roman armies to keep their borders intact. There is no history of Christian nations having open borders anywhere ever in the world. If someone comes and tells you he's discovered that the Gospels preach open borders, I think he's a heretic.
All right, friends, there you hear it from my politically incorrect guests, John Cimarek and Al Parada. I think we're going to get even a little more politically correct. We come back. Hey, Joel, thank you for the call. You're listening to The Line of Fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, we've got a few more politically incorrect minutes with my guests, John Cimarek and Al Parada. Read them on a daily basis over at the stream, stream.org. I not only post all my articles there that we post on other sites as well, but at least once a week I write an exclusive just for the stream. So that's the place to go for great commentary on what's happening in the world around us. And John and Al have co-authored a book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Immigration. So I want to ask one simple question, and then we're going to get even more politically incorrect as we broaden our scope of discussion in our last few minutes. But what about all those that are here illegally? You're talking about kids that have been raised in the country with their parents coming in illegally. So we're not even talking about borders right now. We're not talking about a wall right now. We're talking about those who are here, and we're talking about the Christian approach and what the government's role is, what the church's role is. What about those who are already here? What do we do?
John, who do you want to go?
Whoever wants to go
okay,
first.
Okay, all right. Here, Michael, I would say right now, it's extremely dangerous to offer an amnesty, because that just invites more people to put their lives in the hands of the human traffickers who are raping 80% of women, who are leaving people to die in the desert, who are abandoning them in shipping containers and trucks in the desert, not giving them food and water. If we reward the people who are here now with an amnesty before we secure the border, that's like letting the horse out of the barn. It will endanger hundreds of thousands more people who will flood into America, and we'll have to do another amnesty and another amnesty and another amnesty, just like the Reagan amnesty. What we need to do is first secure the border, enforce our laws, fix our legal immigration system, reduce the number of people we accept every year for whom there are no jobs, who are just bringing into our welfare system. And once we have those things fixed, then and only then we can address the issue of granting some path to green card permanent residency for people who snuck into the country. I would never give them citizenship, however. I don't think you reward that.
Al, want to add anything to that?
Well, yeah, adding on to what John just said is, if you give citizenship to those folks and you still have chain migration, the couple million people that you've just given citizenship to start bringing in relatives, you're growing exponentially. That's how you blow up from 3 million to 11 million. So chain migration has to be part of the – ending chain migration has to be part – or limiting it has to be part of the equation.
Got it. So you don't see a way to maybe have a path that's a more difficult path, or one where reparations are made? So not amnesty, but at least a path of some kind?
Until you get things secure – until you secure the border, again, it leads to a stampede. We that's one thing about history that history shows us. We saw what happened with the Reagan thing. We saw what happened when Obama a few years ago was sort of saying come on over, and all of a sudden you had tens of thousands of children heading towards the U.S. You got to be secure first, then you start dealing with the folks who are here.
Got it. All right, and then one other question. And I'm going to ask it for Jenny in Durham. Does immigration help the population? We know that on average, women between 18 and 44 need to average 2.1 children born during women's childbearing age for a society to sustain itself. We know that many countries around the world have dropped precipitously below the rates to sustain. And that as Jenny in Durham is asking, that in America, our birth rates are too low, if not for immigrants. So what about the argument that if the country is to continue for future generations, then you must take into account that immigrants are helping with higher birth rates to sustain the population, because otherwise the nation just dies as it gets older. What about that argument, John?
Yeah, well, I would say it's almost a one-for-one, the number of children we've killed through abortion and the number of immigrants we've taken into the country. It's almost one-for-one. So we need to end abortion in America, and that right there, if all those children had been born, we wouldn't have needed a single immigrant to have our current population. Secondly, we are bringing people from countries where abortion is illegal to a country where it's legal through 9 months of pregnancy. So we are, in effect, endangering their children by putting them in a place where they can be aborted. And finally, I would say there are ways in which immigration suppresses the native birth rate, because if blue-collar people can't support their families, if they don't get a pay raise in 45 years, if their public schools teach in 24 different languages and they don't see them as usable, people are going to have fewer children because they have to homeschool them or send them to Christian school, or they just know their kids are not going to have a very good prospect in the country, so they won't have as many kids. Our birth rate has plummeted at the same time that we've admitted all those immigrants. I think there's a causal relationship there.
Interesting. Hey, Jenny, I asked the question for you just to make sure that we got it on, but thank you for raising the question. And one more from Harold in Florida. So I think we've answered this already, but the question of when does compassion kick in? The simple answer would be that's not the government's role, that's the church's role, that the government has to focus on security and economic well-being, and that the answer for Harold would be that the church has day and night opportunity to be compassionate. What about the idea, though, that Jesus offers forgiveness and amnesty in many ways, and shouldn't we follow suit? You know, I forgive you, I don't condemn you, go and sin no more, so you're forgiven, now bring about change. What if the government adopted that policy? Al, do you think it could work?
Well, as John pointed out earlier, that would be putting a Christian, forcing a Christian value onto non-Christians in America. But there is another way to look at this, and sort of the same idea what Harold might be talking about. We talked earlier about the Founding Fathers, and the truth is Alexander Hamilton would not be allowed in his own musical because of his views on immigration. However, because they're pretty tight. However, he did have this phrase that I think summarizes this pretty well. He talked about the harmony of ingredients. And it's such a beautiful phrase. We talk about the melting pot. Well, you can throw anything into a pot and melt it, and you're not going to get anything satisfying. But a harmony of ingredients, having the right mix of people, the right mix, and again, some different spices, different cultures coming in, a harmony of ingredients. If we aim for that idea that Alexander Hamilton had, we're aiming somewhere good. We're aiming for something healthy and harmonious, if you want to use that word. And that, I think, is in this time of dysfunction and division. I like keeping that idea in mind when we talk about immigration.
Got it. All clear. All right, listen, we have maybe 3 minutes left, but I want to give each of you an opportunity to be utterly politically incorrect. John, you know that I'm not Catholic, and there are many reasons that I'm not Catholic. You are. But I don't know anyone that's a sharper critic of the Pope right now. So I want you to take a minute and tell us why you have issues with Pope Francis.
I think Pope Francis hates capitalism. I think he resents America because he's from Argentina, a country which was once as rich as America and destroyed its economy through socialism. Everyone I've met from Argentina seems to resent the United States, even the right-wingers. He's a left-winger. He seems to want to dismantle the church's teaching on a number of issues in sexual ethics. I'm not surprised he wants to dismantle the borders of the West so that our countries get inundated and they're all as poor as Argentina.
Got it. And Al, despite the fact that you're an evangelical Christian and you hold to high moral standards, you've been in President Trump's corner for a while and seem to appreciate him more than many. What's the good that you see with President Trump?
Well, he's doing a job we hired him to do. And on one level, it's just as simple as that. We hired him to run the government efficiently, and he's doing his best to do that. Two, another thing I like about him is that people forget he's a builder. We see the showman, we see the noise. He's a builder. And what do builders do? Builders survey the land and figure the best way to make something good out of it. And they draw out the plans and they execute. When we think of Trump a little bit more as a builder, we see a lot of things that he does make more sense. And also, as you know, he has that faith, people of faith around him. For some reason, he's drawn to people of strong faith. You know, we can talk about his own beliefs, all, you know, whatever, but he's drawn to that. And the fact that there's wise counsel, godly counsel around him puts more faith in the notion of him being there than just the man himself, Donald J. Trump, if that makes sense. I have faith in the people around him. Yeah,
and it continues to be a very interesting mix. Hey, the new book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Immigration, by the politically incorrect authors John Zemirak and Al Parada. Gentlemen, it's a joy to have you both on the air together, and we'll have to do it again one day. Thanks so much.
Anytime.
Thank you.
Dr. Brown.
All right. Friends, tomorrow we're going to have a special interview with Dr. Hugh Ross, astronomer Hugh Ross. Now, Hugh Ross has not been one of those chasing blood moons and all the prophetic imagery, but there's going to be a really interesting astronomical phenomenon in just a few days, and he's going to talk to us about it. Is it significant? Is it unusual? How unusual? Does it tie in with a biblical sign or anything like that? So we'll have a great conversation about that tomorrow. We'll take your calls as well. And if you appreciate the broadcast, or if you appreciate us being your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution, you know something's happening in the world. We are going to talk about it here on The Line of Fire. By all means, stand with us. Your support helps us continue. So if we've been a blessing to you, if we've helped you, I mean, you may go to a fast food restaurant, don't think twice about spending money there, go out with friends and family, or buy a little extra here there. Hey, send some of it our way so that we can keep broadcasting in a high-quality way to touch millions around the world. Go to AskDrBrown.org. Click on Donate. That's askdrbrown.org. Thanks for standing with us.